accession number 27773, reel 1.
Sir Robert Clarke, reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, please?
I was born on the 6th of January 1924, i.e. 81 years ago, and I was born in Highgate, North London.
And can you tell me about your family circumstances at that time?
My father was an engineer with a Manchester company, and my mother came from Wales in Somerset, and she was a country girl. And they met during the First World War, and I was born after my brother had been born in 1921. I was born in 1924.
And did your father serve in the First World War?
Yes, he was in the First World War, in the army.
Do you know, did he ever talk about that?
Very little, very rarely.
Do you know where he was?
No, France, mainly.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Highgate, and I attended Highgate School as a day boy, first in the prep school and then in the senior school, and I left in 1941.
Those 2 years, between 1939 and 1941, did you see much of the war in those 2 years?
No, the school was evacuated to Westford Ho in North Devon. And we went down in September 1939 and took over the hotels and boarding houses. And I was there for 2 years.
Even there, in Westward Ho, were you aware of the wider conflict?
Not really. It's a very distant place, near Instow, near Bideford. It was relatively unaffected by the war.
Now, in 1941, you join the Navy, is that
no, in 1941 I went to Cambridge for a year, and I went to King's Cambridge, and I was there during 1941.
What were you studying?
Modern languages, French and German, and I went there mainly because my French master at Highgate had been there, and he was a very intellectual type, and anyway he said he would recommend me to go, so I went there, and I went for, I say, when I was 17.
Again, how aware were you of the war while you were at?
Oh, much more aware of the war at Cambridge. It was quite a political place during the war, Cambridge, and a lot of the dons were Labour-leaning, and there was quite a lot of Labour teaching going on in Cambridge. Though I had a tutor at King's, I can't remember his name, but he had four letters, and he was a splendid old bachelor, and one of the things he vowed he'd never change the size of his suits and during the war, and he would have to slim, which he did. I mean, his clothes hung off him, but he kept them all the time. And he was famous for two things. He had a wonderful collection of French porcelain, and also an enormous collection of detective stories, which he used to read about one a day.
Now, was it a shortened course that you were doing?
Yes, I mean, I could have stayed on a bit longer, but I don't know whether I could have done 3 years there, but I was intending then to come back after the war, and they said they'd keep a place for me.
Were you always aware that you would be you were earmarked for service?
Yes, I think so, yes. But I volunteered to get in early. I wanted to join the Navy because I thought you had sheets and could sleep nice well at nights. And so I opted to go to the Navy, and I went there and joined HMS Collingwood in Fareham, near Portsmouth, where they trained you, all new recruits, for 3 months. And it was the best training you could ever have.
What did that entail?
It was really cleaning people up and making them fit and giving them some discipline. And we were divided into huts of about 30 people in each, and commanded by a pre-war chief petty officer, who were the salt of the earth. and people came there from very poor backgrounds, very slovenly and very dirty. In 3 months they were proud of their uniform and put on several pounds in weight and height. It was a very good course for 3 months. And from there I was sent to a ship which was a converted merchant ship into a light cruiser which did convoy duty, and she went, I joined her in, in Ireland, in Londonderry, and we were on the Atlantic convoys and also one into the Mediterranean. There I was lucky enough to have a very good captain who seemed to look after me, and I was an ordinary seaman, and I learnt a great deal from that and also from the PA officer in charge of my mess deck in the forecastle. And he was a chap who'd been up and down in the other ranks of the Navy during the pre-war years. He got up to chief petty officer and then committed some misdemeanor and went back to a naval seaman. He was then a petty officer, but he was totally without any side or any sort of bullying, and again he taught me a lot about living with people.
The convoys that you were on in the Atlantic and the Mediterranean, what role was your vessel taking?
I was ordinary seaman, and I was on the loading of the 4-inch guns and forecastle.
And how eventful were those convoys?
We met quite a number of submarines, and we were bombed 2 or 3 times, but we were not sunk. We lost quite a number of ships in the convoys we were attending to. The Atlantic War was at its height then, I think. But we protected them as much as we could, and we had depth charges on board, and we had 4-inch guns and Oerlikons.
Did you ever have any success in engaging?
We sunk one submarine, yes, during the entire 9 months I was on home.
How did that come about?
Well, they were firing at a convoy and torpedoes, and we picked her up on the Asdic and were fortunate enough to be on top of her and drop the depth charges and forced her to the service when she surrendered.
And the crew?
Those who survived, not all of them, we took on board.
What were they? What sort of condition were they?
They were all right. They'd only been in the water about an hour or so they were quite quick. But
so from the convoys in the Mediterranean, you returned. How did you come to join SOE?
Well, after about 9 months, I was recommended for a commission and went to HMS King Alfred in Brighton to train as an officer, which I did. I joined the Navy knowing I was colorblind, but fortunately when the tests came to become a seaman, the man behind me told me what to say, and that got me through that test. But they found me out when I was trained to be an officer, and they said I was I had to take a shore job, and I couldn't get a watchkeeping steward with colour blindness, which didn't please me very much. Anyway, a little while afterwards, they asked for anybody who had any experience of sailing and would like to do an individual job. And I had sailed. I had a friend who was his father owned a 12-meter, which was one of the big yachts, and he'd taken me as crew on that. And I'd been there, and I'd sailed on the Welsh Harp in North London. Well, that was the limit of my experience, but I said I could sail, which I just about could. And so I volunteered, and the next thing I found, I was interviewed in Baker Street at the headquarters of SOE, and then I told I should go on a course of training, which was partly for fitness and partly for irregular warfare, in Arisaig in West Scotland. I didn't know what on earth I was joining, but I got up there, and it was exceedingly arduous in that although it was June, it rained for 21 out of 22 days. They marched us all over the West Highlands, and they also taught you how to drive a railway train, and you were allowed to drive the Western Isles Express at the end of the course from Fort William, to Fort William rather, from RSA, which was very exciting. But that was quite a strenuous course. And from there I was sent to Helford in Cornwall, which was a place for them. Yeah.
In Arisaig, what do you remember of the other trainees?
Well, they were all, I didn't know what they were doing when I was there, but I found out afterwards, of course. They were all trained to be agents, and the most famous of them was the two Czechs who went in and killed Heydrich? No. Is it Heydrich? Yes. Head of the... and they were two very, very ordinary bank clerk, I think, and a peasant from Czechoslovakia, knowing they were going into certain death. In fact, they took the pills with them. And they were parachuted into Czechoslovakia, killed him, and one of them was shot while in the attack on Heydrich. And the other one got into a church tower and took his pill. But they were the most unlikely-looking heroes, and they certainly were heroes, you could ever imagine. Ordinary working people without any flamboyance. And they had a minder who was looking after them all the time until they went into Czechoslovakia. But there were several others, too. And they really had some shooting practice and with pistols and unarmed combat. That sort of thing was taught.
Do you recall any of the other trainees you were served? Did you ever meet any of them again?
I never met them again. No, never.
The instructors too. What do you recall of them?
They were all army, and they were sort of physical training instructors and weapons people. And I wasn't taught anything about cloak and dagger there at all, except the pistols and unarmed combat.
Where were you billeted at Arisaig?
I can't remember what the house was called. It was the big house on the Arisaig estate. And there were quite a lot of people, 20 or so people working there, or guests.
And what were the living conditions like inside?
Oh, very good indeed, except it was very primitive. And said it was very wet and very hard work indeed.
Now, you said you were, after that, you went to Helford.
Yes, in them.
Now, what was going on there?
Helford was an SOE base for ships, mainly trawlers and speedboats, motor speedboats, or torpedo boats, and they did it for training purposes and also for visits to the Channel Islands, which were within cruising distance of the MTBs. And I stayed ashore at one of the three big houses by Port Nevis, which is about 5 miles up the river from the mouth of the Helford River. And I was there trained in the use of small boats and accompanied a couple of visits to Channel Islands, really as a trainee, and just to watch what they did. And there they landed some people, agents, into Jersey and Guernsey.
Do you remember anything about the agents themselves? Were they British? Or
no, they were never introduced at all as the individuals they met on the boat as they were taken out of the Helford River and they were plonked ashore. We never had any conversation with them.
Again, how eventful were the journeys? Did you encounter...
No, we didn't encounter any Germans. We landed on isolated beaches. And there was never any problem with them at all.
Other personnel at Helford, do you recall who else was there with you?
Yes, there were a number of people whose names I can't remember, but most of them were lower-stocked fishing people who had joined the Navy and they were very suitable for the sort of work that SOE were doing on small boats. Both there was one French tunnelman called Mutin, which was a base ship there, and which eventually went to sail to North Africa. But she was a French tunnelman, and she still exists today, and she still fishes. And there were one or two people from the Channel Islands, and I think there were two other people in training with me, and there was a staff of about six.
Was Jerry Holdsworth still with Helford at that?
No, Jerry Holdsworth had been at Helford, but he'd moved on to North Africa by the time I arrived, and he was along the coast of North Africa operating against France with another chap called Brooks Richards, who subsequently became an ambassador in the Foreign Office, but who stayed for about 3 years in SOE. But Jerry Holdsworth was, who was eventually where I became first based in Italy, in Monopoly, No. 1 Special Force, and he was then in North Africa as a lieutenant commander, and he arrived at Monopoly in southern Italy as a commander INVR.
Now, how did you come to move from Helford, leave Helford to move down to the Mediterranean?
I was attached to a ship going to Algiers, where the SOE was called ISSU-6, Interservices Signal Unit 6. I'm trying to think who commanded that, but I can't remember. And I was told I was going on to northern Africa, to Bone, and with a view to joining Commander Holdsworth's unit in Monopoly from there. And I went to Bone and picked up there an Italian trawler of about 100 tons, I suppose, probably 80 tons. And we sailed her from there round Sicily up the east coast of Italy to a place called Monopoly, which had a harbour. And it was rather rough weather, I remember. It took us about 6 days to get from North Africa to Monopoly, which is about 50 miles south of Bari and 40 miles north of Brindisi on the east coast of the Adriatic.
Who were you using as crew for that vessel that you took?
The crew was already on board. They were nearly all Lowestoft ratings and had been in the fishing business before. And there were only a crew there of... Well, I was the only officer, and there was a petty officer and a crew of five. And we had a diesel engine. And there was an engineer amongst the five, and we sailed from Bone past Sicily to Cape Spartimento and up that way around Italy. This was in December 1943.
Now, No. 1 Special Force, and based in Monopoly, what was it trying to do at that time?
It was responsible for all the agents in northern Italy. They were putting people in by parachute at that stage, local Italian people. And it was also used as a base of five little schooner trawlers, which I was on one, and I think four others. And that was commanded by a chap called Hilary Scott, who was a pre-war lawyer in the City of London. And he was lieutenant commander. And we were a mixed unit. We had something like 30 Fannies, F-A-N-Y-S, and there were, I suppose, at the beginning, only about 12 people under Jerry Holdsworth, of whom I would think 8 were Army, 1 Air Force, and the rest were Naval officers.
And the Naval component, what sort of operations did they launch?
They were intended to land behind German lines in the Adriatic coast, between there and Ancona, and we did, taking off prisoners of war, English prisoners of war, who had escaped, taking on, putting some agents ashore, doing some beach reconnaissance, and we blew up some trains on the railway line, which runs right along the coast down there, right, just inland from the seashore. And that was my first job was at, in Christmas 1943, I was told to supervise, if that's the right word, some agents who they wanted to land, Italian agents, who they wanted to land in, partly in Chioggia, north of Venice, and partly in Istria, on the other side of the Adriatic, on the western side. And so join this Italian submarine with an entirely Italian crew who had changed over to the Allies in September from Mussolini and surrendered their submarines. And we set off for a week's trip to Venice and Istria.
Was there much enemy activity in the precise areas that you had to...
No, there was some... we hadn't got control of the air then, so there was a bit of bombing. And some... we were depth charged when we were just off Venice. But that was all. And the agents, I say, were all Italian. And I rowed them ashore at outside Chioggia. And then there were two more agents to be dropped in Istria. And we went across to Istria. But there was too much enemy activity on the land to land them there, and we hadn't got a free landing space, so we took them back.
What other operations did you personally take part in? On what sort?
From Monopoly, when I came back in January, I was given command of this schooner trawler. And we used to use them to take us and supplies up to a place called Altona and Termoli, which was just this side of where the Germans' front line then was. And from there we moved into Italian MS boats, which were the equivalent of our MTBs, and which were quite quick and very efficient, and had an Italian crew. And we used to take the people up the coast and either collect people, prisoners of war, or land people, or beach reconnaissance, which we did by canoe from the MS boats, going to the shore and landing on the shore and then using that to do the beach reconnaissance.
You mentioned the Italian crews. How reliable were they?
They were utterly reliable, as it turned out. I had no idea. They, of course, just changed over. And the sub-baroners were extremely brave and tough, because when we were depth chart, I thought we should might go home, but they were all for waiting up there and waiting till it was all over and then trying again, which they did. And they were very hospitable, because I could not speak one word of Italian when I arrived. And I must say, all the instructions were passed by word of mouth from person to person. And everything sounded like abandoned ship to me, but it wasn't so. And it was a very peaceful voyage up to Venice and across to Istria and back again. And I read Plato's Republic. Power to while away the time.
So Robert Clark, Reel 2. Yes, the operation to destroy to derail the train. What do you recall of that operation?
Well, it was relatively simple. It was fairly open country down there, and we landed by a canoe with the necessary explosives, plastic, to blow up the the rail when the engine went over the top of it, and we did this on two or three occasions with success. And then we went back to canoes and paddled back to the MS boats.
Were you on land to see the results of the...
No, we were out at sea by the time the results came by when the ships exploded.
Could you see
the trains exploded?
Were you aware when it...
Yeah, we were away on the sea by the time. And we used to go up, we only could operate during the non-moon periods, and so we used to go up to this place, Termini or Ortona, with the schooners, and then transfer to the MS and use the MS boats. And their maximum range, really, in order, because we wanted to get back before it was too much daylight, was about as far north as Ancona, or just south of Ancona. And that's where we did some beach reconnaissance there. We did it for Popsky's Private Army, which were going to land on the coast there. And I think we... hope we saved them a lot of trouble by discovering there was quite a shallow bar across the bay where we were landing. But it was all our operations were conducted in peace and quiet, and no bangs, no firing of guns. And our objective was to go in and out again without being seen, which we managed to do on. And we used to do about two a fortnight during the 2 weeks or less that the moon wasn't up. We used to do probably two or three operations a month, and then at the end of that period we'd come back to in our schooners to Monopoly and prepare for the next operation.
Now, I think around about the summer of 1944 these sort of operations stopped, is that correct?
That's right, yes. Really, the Allieds started to advance up the east coast of Italy, and there wasn't really many places we could go to. So I was offered the opportunity either to go to Australia or to go with the partisans in northern Italy. And I thought that going to the partisans would keep me nearer my then girlfriend, now my wife, and so I opted to go to the partisans in northern Italy, where I was slated to go in with some weapons and train the partisans in their use, mainly Sten guns and small Bofors.
Did you have to attend certain courses in parachute?
No, I had to go jump out of an aeroplane, but that doesn't take any time at all. I remember going down one morning and arriving at the place about 9, and by 10:30 I was taking my first flight and jumping out of an Italian aircraft over Brindisi. And I did 4 practice jumps in it, and that was my course. And then I was told where we were going in northern Italy, and I had 3 abortive attempts to land there, or we couldn't find, never found the fires which were supposed to mark our landing zone. So 3 times we came back to Brindisi. The 4th time it worked all right.